This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
The University of the Third Age, or U3A, organise a series of talks Wednesday afternoons in the public library here in Palmerston North. The theme of the talks for 2025 was volunteering. Manawatu People's Radio was on hand to provide audio engineering services and record the audio for broadcast. Here's this week's episode.
Welcome everyone, thank you for coming. So Environment Network Manawatu, we are an environmental hub for the Manawatu region, providing sector leadership, building capability and capacity while creating community. We are driven by volunteers within the region and they are the backbone of everything we do, supporting our 65 member groups. So at ENM, we understand that life is part of a thriving, self-sustaining ecosystem. And our vision is that the ecological and human communities in the Manawatu River catchment are living together in harmony. Our four po are our key priorities that guide everything we do. By focusing on these, we believe we can achieve our vision and make a real difference. Our po cover climate action, biodiversity, food sovereignty, and circular economy. Today we'll be talking about volunteer research, a bit about ENM and covering those four areas, as well as some great volunteer stories and lots of interactive conversations. So to get started, what I thought we'd do is have a quick quiz. Does anyone know what percentage of people volunteer in New Zealand? Anyone have a guess? So it's 21.5%, sorry. Yeah, so it's actually quite a large percentage of New Zealand. And does anyone know how much it would cost to pay all of these volunteers annually, roughly? So if they had to pay them, it would cost $4 billion. So we really are well supported by volunteers within New Zealand. Did anyone want to put their hand... Who volunteers out of our group here today? Oh, wow, that's fantastic. Cool. Great. So... Oh, sorry, I've got carried away. I forgot about some slides. Great. So, challenges in micro-volunteering. So at the moment, we're finding that... our leaders are finding that there is a decreasing number of people applying for volunteer roles. The volunteers who arrive are only filling in one or two shifts and then disappearing, and getting specific people to fill key roles is becoming more and more challenging. So recently I attended a workshop about having a volunteer buffet. It's about giving volunteers the opportunity to walk in, sign a waiver and get on with it. Easy one-off tasks where they have no pressure to return. These things don't require any training or background knowledge. So the people who were giving this presentation were talking about the benefits. It's a great way to delegate tasks, split off tasks from bigger projects, get abandoned projects going again, use their key skills for that one or two times that they come along. And it's an option for them to be able to see lots of different areas within the organisation. Their recommendation was having up to 10 different options for them to choose from. So at the moment, we're finding that people have a bigger influx of... people's lives have a greater flux. Commitment is no longer popular, with the average hobby only lasting 1.5 years. The average marriage lasting 8 years. The average time to own a house is also 8 years, perhaps related. And the average job is about 4 to 5 years instead of 40. So as you can see, there's a huge decrease in commitment, as well as a declining trust in organisations. So So the benefit of having something like a volunteer buffet, for example, would be that it builds trust within organisations without having to commit, reduces barriers like lots of training and paperwork, prevents boredom and repetitious tasks, so you can choose what you're wanting to do depending on where you're up to, and it allows autonomy. So research from Volunteer Central. Research from Volunteer Central. So they're finding that environmental volunteers, they find that they're wanting to change something like a law or a behaviour. They're more likely to come if they are as they identify as an environmental volunteer. New people are more likely to come if there is a social benefit, like being listened to, feeling supported, feeling valued, and have a sense of belonging. So essentially having a sense of community, which I think we all can relate to, and that the volunteers that are running the organisation, that the people feel connected and share the similar values. So to keep volunteers coming along, they're recommending that we have use of inclusive language, use diversity within images when promoting whatever you're promoting, and make people feel welcome and appreciated. Now, so as one of our PO, we've got climate action. So our goal at E&M is to raise awareness for climate issues, which hold both local and central governments accountable. Climate action involves slowing down climate change, such as reducing emissions, reducing wastefulness and overconsumption, having clean air, pushing for climate-friendly policy, and helping build sustainable living cities. So we recognise that climate action is connected to a lot of our other areas of our PO, but it's really important to pay attention to this one as well. So what I'd like to do is, throughout this talk, we're going to have some case studies. So the idea being that we have a scenario that we put you in, and we just want some ideas thrown out to get some feedback on what we could do differently or help different groups improve. So what we're asking is that we stay on topic because we are limited on our time, and just be mindful, let other people have a go if you've been able to contribute a lot already. So case study number one, we've got: imagine you're a part of a trust that are working towards getting more people cycling. How can we better recognise and celebrate the contributors who volunteer to make people feel valued and encouraged and keep them coming back? So just hands up if you've got any ideas on what we could do to recognise and celebrate our existing volunteers.
Yes? Give them a free ride.
Give them a free bike. You're not wrong. That would definitely keep them coming. Down the back, yeah?
We couldn't hear what she said. What was the answer?
Oh, sorry. She said give them a free bike. Oh. Yes.
Anyone? You said make them feel part of a group.
Definitely make them feel supported. Definitely. Got any other ideas?
Have a specific event and ask them to assist with organising.
Definitely. That's right. All right, we'll move on. So we've got biodiversity protection enhancement. We aim to protect and increase the native birds, insects and plants while also improving water quality. Our network, including Source to Sea, is working together to preserve and restore the health of the Manawatū River catchment, which is the area of land where rainwater and streams flow into the Manawatū River. So a lovely little volunteer story. We've got Bob. He moved to Foxton 35 years ago, and from the beginning he noticed litter. Then began to notice that children were getting thorns in their feet and inflatable toys being punctured, thanks to the invasive box thorn plant. Bob decided to take action. He started chopping down box thorn, coastal wattle, and other invasive species that had been rapidly spreading. As Bob worked, passers-by saw what he was doing and wanted to join in. Fast forward to today, every Wednesday a small group get together and work on tackling these invasive weeds. Bob, now nearing 80, isn't planning on stopping anytime soon. He said, it's an obsession, not a passion, reflecting on his decades of work. Success requires more volunteers to lighten the load and make a bigger impact. With the team all nearing their retirement years, they are urgently calling for the next generation to step up. So, case study number two. Imagine you're part of a gardening group in Palmy. You're hosting a planting session once a month. Your regulars are slowly dropping away due to age and health. How might we be able to get more people to start volunteering in that age range of 25 to 50? And what might be some fun ways to make it more fun and inviting for people to come? So hands up if you've got any ideas. Down the back there. In public spaces, yeah. Having something social afterwards, food and coffee, yeah, it's definitely always good. Do you got anyone?
Yeah, just have really cheap t-shirts that people wear when they're volunteering with the information, like, on the back. So it's just a sort of, it's silent advertising about the group.
Cool. If you didn't hear that, it was have cheap t-shirts for the team to wear when they're working, and it's silent advertising for people who are passing by.
Go through schools and get them to tackle the subject matter with the senior kids.
You know, oh, that's great.
7-year-old, 18-year-olds. Mm.
So that was go through schools and get them to tackle these subjects, maybe get them involved as well.
Make it a parent and child activity. Bring your children along.
Definitely make it inclusive for all ages. Cool. That's great, thank you. Okay. So community food sovereignty. Our goal is to ensure that everyone has access to healthy food that is grown in sustainable ways. Community food sovereignty is about ensuring that our communities have access to healthy, culturally appropriate food that is grown locally and sustainably. Our network in this area, including Manawatū Food Action Network, work together to help communities grow their own food, make healthy food more accessible, reduce food waste, and provide free or affordable food for people to access. Beth Lou is passionate about the health and well-being benefits of growing your own food. She's had her hands in the soil from a young age, helping her mum out in the garden. As she grew up, she's always been sure to have a garden wherever she lives. 5 years ago, Beth and her friends watched a film called Sustainable Futures. They reflected on what they could do to help contribute to their community and grow more sustainable food. They developed the organisation or group called Let's Grow Palmy. The group empower people to grow their own veg, share their produce and what they've learnt with others. It's a great way to break down barriers between people and building a caring community. She also runs Growing Gardens, which is a project where they install raised garden beds in people's homes for free. So case study number three, which probably leads a little bit into what we were just talking about. Imagine you have a young family of three kids under 10. You are wanting to volunteer as a family. What are some appropriate activities that you might be able to get involved in, and what are some times and days that would be better?
Get them to pick up litter on the beaches.
Get them to pick up litter on the beach? Yes, definitely. There's actually a great group in Foxton who are doing that, yeah.
Somewhere that's close to a playground so that the children get to enjoy a playground experience afterwards.
Oh, yes.
Whatever it may be.
Sure. That was having a playground nearby to what they're doing, so then they have something fun to do afterwards, I guess, that reward system. Yeah. Great. Circular economy. So we want to our planet to thrive and continue to provide us with resources for generations to come. We support groups and projects that inspire collective understanding and community sharing, that offer opportunities to get involved, to educate, upskill the public on their own contribution, and increase understanding of consumer and buyer's choice. Ian Robertson's Repair Magic. So Ian Robertson, he extends the life of plastic items. With his long life of appreciation for plastic, Ian repairs all sorts of damaged items that often go to waste. Ian's relationship with plastic began at childhood, when he assembled kit set models of planes, trams and buses, leading him to design his own models. One of his commissioned models is now on display in the Cable Car Museum of Wellington. Ian is one of the volunteers at the Repair Cafe. Menshed, Supergrand's Manawatu and a handful of other volunteers take part once a month, attracting around 20 volunteers to run the organisation, and they are giving their skills up to people in repairing their belongings. 217 items were repaired and saved in the last year. Recently, a young child brought his plastic boat, broken and beaten, having endured abuse from a little boy. Ian was able to repair this with plastic welding methods, and the boat was almost new. Case study number four. You are a part of a group that sorts and recycles. You are part of a group that sorts and recycle bottle tops. How can you engage teenagers so that they are able to get involved? What values might they need to share to encourage them to volunteer? What was that?
Vouchers.
Oh, liquor vouchers. Yeah.
I actually do that over there.
Yes.
Every Thursday, and there's some younger, disabled young people come by making it competitive.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. So if you didn't hear that, making it competitive for younger people can be quite good because they get into it and there's a bit of tension, I guess. Yeah, you want to win, get that competitive side going.
But it also makes them very aware when they're at home, mm-hmm. shopping with their mothers.
Cool, and it also makes them aware. Oh, that's great. She's just saying the benefits of getting involved with that is that once they're shopping afterwards, that they know what sort of plastics to look for. That's fantastic. Thank you. So a part of Environment Network 102 is we have our key functions, and we do this to make sure we're effective and efficient, which is pivotal for our understanding, which is pivotal and underpins all of our roles across our ENM. We have an Environmental Initiative Fund, which is one of our key functions. The EIF Fund... The EIF Fund funds environmental projects within Palmerston North and hopefully to Manawatu soon. We're in our fourth year of distribution and have given out over $224,000. As a result, we've been able to help organisations like Just Silch. Just Silch are a lifeline feeding as many people as they can. Their mission is simple: reduce food waste, serve the community and care for our planet. With a dedicated team of over 100 volunteers, they are able to distribute around $85,000 worth of food every week, which is feeding about 1,400 people a week. So imagine the chaos. You've got doorways blocked, pallets towering, people are scrambling to move them, disassemble, then reassemble, just so they can clear the path. Absolute nightmare. We were able to give Just Silch a large grant, which enabled them to increase their storage capacity from 14 tonne to 20 tonne, allowing them to get more food out the door quickly and effectively. Be inspired, connected, and start volunteering. Our groups are looking for more volunteers with short-term and long-term projects, tree plantings, getting gardens going, and helping people from different areas. If you're interested in getting involved, feel free to get in touch and we can see what we can do. Thank you. Cool. So I've been told to get started with what our different groups are doing. So essentially under the four POs, so climate action, food sovereignty, biodiversity and circular economy, we've got different groups within each sector. So for example, biodiversity, we've got the beach cleanups, planting native trees, we've got green corridors, they do lots of things, and they do lots of planting on Summer Hill, and then we've got pest control as well.
What are the green corridors?
Green corridors, they remove... Oh, you're hiding. Oh, yes. Remove... Lots of weeds. Remove weeds, plant native trees, but they're all... is it ethically sourced natives?
Yes. Yeah, they're all...
from local areas.
It's level 2 trees and level 2
Yeah.
So why are they called corridors?
It creates a path from the top of the ranges down through the city.
It's the path from the ranges down through the city, which is what the corridor part is.
For birds or for...
for people to... for birds. Sorry, what was the question back there? Absolutely. Yeah. So green corridors are doing a lot of planting and I would say restoration work. And, you know, a lot of this is on banks as well. So if you don't have enough trees, the roots are holding those banks together to keep them up. So there's a lot of benefits there.
So does that mean that all the tuis that we get here are actually that they're flying down each day into town?
I don't know, yes. Yeah, I take it, yes. So I think probably one thing that's quite important to note is we aren't hands-on within these groups. We support. So one thing we pride ourselves on is being what we call like an upside-down umbrella. So we're here and all of our groups are above us. You know, they're more important than us. And we pride ourselves on trying to help these groups as much as we can. And so that can look, different in all sorts of areas depending on what people need. From my perspective, I do the communication side of things. So we run a newsletter and I ask our groups every month, you know, what events are coming up? What do you want the public to know about? And then we've got our social media. So when our groups do interesting posts that we think that the community would like to know more about, then we share them onto our pages. And the benefit of that is, you know, the groups that we work with sometimes don't have that many followers. So, you know, they're quite small and they don't have the capacity to be letting the whole region know about what's going on. But we, because we've got quite a strong presence within the area, when we post, it helps them get more people. So it's little things like that.
So how would we access that? Is it an online thing? Or
so we're everywhere.
An email list?
Yeah, everywhere, essentially. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, a little bit on LinkedIn, working on that one. We're definitely on... we have a website. Website's probably the best thing if you wanted to read more about each area. And we've got this list of all of our environment groups, and then there's links to all of their different things that they've got going on. And then we've got an event calendar as well. So the event calendar, I think, is probably the coolest thing on the website, because then you can see what's coming up that week. And I try to keep on top of it. It's not perfect, but at least you kind of get an idea of what's coming up and has the information, who to get in contact with, where it's going to be, times, dates, that sort of thing.
And what's the URL for your website?
The website is enm.org.nz.
enm.org.nz.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, but if you if you search Environment Network Manawatu or even Environment Network, things like that, we always pop up quite easily. Yeah. And going back to the original question, so with our four different areas, what sort of organisations do we work with? So we covered a little bit on biodiversity, but essentially anything that sort of native birds, bugs, and protecting those things as well. So obviously this is the pest control side. And looking after the health of the water as well. We work with some groups in Foxton who are looking after the estuary, and they've done some incredible work around their management plan that's coming up, that's just been released for the next 10 years because it's a RAM site.
Which is?
I have no idea. I know it's... Yeah, it's something important. and that's the biodiversity.
So how much is that government and how much, you say, volunteers helping clear up the estuary and so on? What does that
involve? It's a management plan. I know that that's councils, volunteers, iwi, there's bound to be a bunch more other people who are involved with that, but essentially it's about preserving and making sure that's well looked after, because it's such an important site, and it's globally acknowledged as a really important site.
Okay. So, which means some of the volunteer activities, not just going out there and digging and tramping, pulling things.
Absolutely,
up,
yeah. So
advisory, kind of volunteer advisors and submissions.
Yeah, definitely. So depends on the group and what they're sort of wanting to do. I mean, obviously it's quite easy to think, you can volunteer and plant some trees. But behind most groups is some sort of format, especially if they're a legal trust or a legal entity, then they have to have some sort of governance behind them as well. So, there's quite a few groups that we work with. They've got a board. Most of the time, boards are voluntary, especially in our space. I mean, our board is also voluntary. And that's so, so important for these sort of organisations to be able to run. And, boards often bring really strong skill sets with them, which are really important when planning and thinking about what's going to happen for that organisation. And then there's also sort of, I guess, behind the scenes stuff. You might have someone who's doing that social media side of things. You might be a volunteer accountant. Lots of these things are really important to be able to actually keep the momentum going, and looking after the health of these groups. Funding applications are an absolute nightmare, and if you have a volunteer who knows what they're doing on that space, then that can always be quite helpful as well. Yeah.
How do you make sure that
I have to say, I've never heard of that one before. I think what's quite nice about these sort of organisations is that they all have very similar values, and because they're all dying for more people to get involved, if there were two groups that overlapped, I think they'd more likely jump for joy and think, great, now we've doubled the power and we can get more done. So that's always quite helpful. And then I guess, if we're going to use the plant side of things, they're either a native plant or they're a weed. It's quite black and white on that front, so that helps. I'm sure there's a lot more. I'm not personally a gardener, and I don't wish to speak out of term in terms of specific plants and that sort of thing, but I'm not aware of anything like that, yeah. But good question. Thank you. Yeah.
Is there scope for rationalisation of the number of groups?
Pardon me?
Is there scope for rationalisation of the number of groups?
How do you mean by that?
If they're doing similar things, just say, why don't you have groups, so fewer people running?
Well, I think majority of them all work in different areas. Okay. So using the gardening side of things, they look after different parks or areas. On the cycling side of things, trying to get more people cycling within the the region, there are overlaps and people work together to achieve more, and that there's definitely more of a joining forces style there, because some groups, like, you know, Greasy Chain has an amazing presence within the community. Greasy Chain, they are, I think their goal is to get more people cycling, and I'm sure they do a lot more, but my office of my head can't recall everything they do, but I know that they organise lots of great things in the community, and they have Bob Sheldon, who does a huge amount for the community. He runs, he's the chair of that, and they did that really fun cycling event maybe in February, and dress up in old time punk rock, steampunk outfits to raise money, which was really cool, and they do a lot more, but there's other smaller organisations that they help out and compare notes, share resources, things like that. Yeah, but I think it's that whole thing of community, and these people will enjoy being connected to like-minded people, so it's quite nice that they help each other out and support when possible. Yeah, that's great. Cool, do you want me to jump into... Yeah. Right, where does funding come from E&M? And does the E&M website list our volunteer groups? Great. So on the website, we've got about our member groups, and that's got the full list of our different groups that we work with. And if you click on each link, it'll take you and it'll give you some information about each group and links. If they've got a website, if they've got Facebook, we'll connect those there, so then everything's easy to find. Funding-wise, we are funded from, I'm going to say, at least 15 different grants across the board. Obviously you get funding from places like PNCC, the City Council. There's lotteries, ECCT, COGS, there's some from the sometimes we get some from pub charities, some of the other district councils. There's quite a huge amount, and it's really important for any organisation to not rely on one contributor of funding, so you have more stabilisation, so that if something like potentially what's going to happen today, then you're not going to completely fall over when you've got lots of different income streams coming through.
When you say what's happening today, that's the council meeting?
Yeah. So potentially a huge amount of community funding is going to be cut. So we don't know exactly what's going on. But yes, we will find out today. So that's an interesting time.
Do you have a lobby involved in there, or do you need to just wait and find the decisions?
So this was a really interesting one, because it's kind of been done through whispers. It's not a publicly known, you know, the council didn't come out and say we're going to look at changing this. So it's a bit tricky, but so personally I found out going to a Tipu Harakiki meeting, and from then my manager Mads, she put out a email to our member groups opposed to the general public and said, hey look, this is what's going on as far as we're as far as we understand, and if you want to send an email or show up to council to show your support for community, then please do. It's an interesting one. I've not heard of it, but I've also not been in the community space for a long time either. It's a tricky one. Otherwise, we usually have really great relationships with the council, with the food, the food sovereignty policy that went through. E&M had a huge amount to do with the organisation and what did and didn't go in there. And we helped consult with the council through the entire process. We wrote submissions, we presented it, you know, we were really heavily involved with that. We're also organising a climate action event next month, and we're doing that alongside Adam. Is it Adam Bennett? I can't recall his last name right now, but one of the councillors. So on a normal day, we have a great relationship with the council, so it's definitely hard to hear, you know, that something might else be coming up that's slightly out of the blue that we weren't aware of. Yeah. Does that kind of answer your question? Yeah. Cool. Is there anyone? Cool. Great. So when PNCC makes a contribution to an organisation, e.g. 10K for Green Corridor Plants, is it informed of the value? Oh, yeah, so the reporting side of things, right? So, I'll just expand this from PNC, so to just general funding. So when we are funded by an organisation for whatever means, there is a lot of reporting involved with that. So usually if the amount of reporting required changes depending on how much money is granted, which is, you know, it's quite fair. If you're only giving out $1,000, you're not going to want a 10-page document on what you've done. It's quite excessive. So for PNC, for example, they require 6 monthly reporting. So whenever you see organisations who are asking for people to do a survey, no one enjoys surveys, let's be honest, but we have to do it. It's part of our contract. And most organisations who are with councils will require to do a survey. It's just part of something we have to do. Alongside that, we have stories that we tell. There might be specific metrics depending on what the grant was and what we said we were going to do. But essentially, when you apply for a grant, it says, you know, what is the problem? What are you going to do about it? And how can you prove that you've done what you said you were going to do? So on the flip side, when you report, what did you do? How effective was it? You know, what were the outcomes? And did you spend all the money, essentially? In a really, really small nutshell, that's sort of what they ask. So a lot of statistics are involved with that, depending on, you know, what it was. For example, we do a self-directed stream cleanup event. So if you had a group that wanted to do something fun and clean up a bit of a stream, you can go and do that yourself. And the council fund that. And so for us as a metric, what we have to do is say how much rubbish was collected, how many kilometres of stream were cleaned up. So, you know, in that regard, that's really easy because it's quite black and white. How much did you do? Whereas for other things, it can be quite hard. It's like, you know, how much impact did you have on the community? So that's when you need feedback from the community to say what you've been up to. It's a lot more grey area opposed to clean metrics, you know. Yeah. Does that kind of answer what you were... Yeah, cool. Do you have a volunteer coordinator? We do not. Apart from things like our lid sorting, recycling that we do, so once a week, as you're saying, we take lids regardless, 2, 4 and 5s, as well as metal and aluminium lids. The reason we do this is that the recycling system that we have, unfortunately, because they are quite flat, small items, they literally fall through the cracks of the system. So we take them, we sort them out into the different plastics and metals, and then drop them off at different recyclers around Palmy. So metal recyclers, that's pretty obvious. It's just melted down and then turned into something else, which is fabulous. And out in Longburn, they take our plastic and they turn them into other plastic items like rubbish bags. So that's really the only bit of hands-on volunteer work that we do. But we work with volunteers who organise their own events. So we're less about... We get volunteers coming through our website a lot, and we've actually teamed up with Volunteer Central to better organise that and create a better system in order for people to actually get involved. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but people who fill out a form and say, hey, I want to volunteer, versus people who actually show up, and then people who continue to show up, you know, I would say it's probably like a 10% conversion rate. It's really, really low. You know, that's a stat off the top of my head, and I'm also not on the ground, so it's not always the case, but it is a really, really low stat. So it is always tricky getting that sort of, getting volunteers involved. And I think it's because we help organisations in different ways, but we're not organising these events, so it would be impractical for us to also organise the volunteer as well. But we do, you know, if an organisation tells us that they're looking for a specific volunteer, then we post about that, and people who come through, we send them directly to the organisation who have said that they wanted that person for whatever means. Yeah. Free staff, paid, could be full-time jobs. Can you read this?
Do you have a volunteer? For any staff, paid or not, this could be a full-time. Do you have a volunteer coordinator for any staff, paid or not? This could be a full-time job.
I see. Oh. Sorry. Yeah. So I mean, we have. So Mads, my manager, she's a coordinator for Environment Network Manawatū, and we're all part-time staff. There's just not enough funding to have us all full-time. And we're hoping that she's able to go full-time soon, just because there's so much work to do. And I guess the good thing about having lots of part-timers is that you've got really niche and key skill sets, and you're able to get each smaller thing done really well, opposed to having one or two full-timers who have a small amount of knowledge in each part and perhaps don't have that same sort of skill set in order to get those same sort of jobs done. Does that answer the question? Yeah.
Right. No. Okay. The question now.
Yes.
You're dealing with lots of groups and so on, so you will have some idea what approaches do work effectively bringing people into volunteer.
It is actually an interesting one. If you didn't hear that, what works well to bring volunteers into groups. What I've found when we post on social media, sort of advertise specific roles, so saying we need someone to do the baking for our repair cafe once a month. It's very specific, it's quite niche, opposed to saying we need volunteers in general. We find that if they know exactly what they're signing up to, they're more likely to actually get involved. And working with Kate, she said that it's actually better having a smaller onboarding type form saying, hey, I'm interested, and then when she gets involved, she interviews them, gets them to fill out like a decent form, and from there trying to reduce the amount of paperwork that's involved moving forward. She was saying that groups that have got really huge onboarding systems, people don't enjoy that, and when they don't have to have it, or if they can reduce it, it's a lot more effective. I think probably going back to the Volunteer Central research, you know, people who identify as a volunteer, an environmental volunteer, when they have really brought into the cause, that helps a lot as well. So the team who do rubbish collection off the beach, for a start, sounds quite cool, and you always enjoy being at the beach, so that's always a good start. If they live in Foxton, they're more likely to actually attend, whereas if they live in Palmy, they're less likely to, just because it's that extra layer of travel. And then I guess if you know the people who are organising it, you've got that emotional buy-in there as well, which also helps. And then obviously once they're there, having those things like good connections, feeling valued and things like that. But I think it's still something we're really working on, because it is an ongoing challenge for us.
Yeah.
Was there any questions?
Okay. there's been some suggestions coming up linking a volunteer activity to social activity, picnics or group things. Is that something that's done much?
I think in general there's usually a morning tea or an afternoon tea, you know, some sort of food element included. It does add an extra layer of, I guess, organisation for one of the volunteers who are running the event. And depending on how many people you've got in that group before trying to build on it, depends on whether they've got capacity and funds to do that as well. I know for, which group is it? Pitt Park. Beth, she does a lot of baking so that they've got morning tea or afternoon tea, depending on what time of year that they're doing things, just to help have that sort of social aspect afterwards. I haven't heard of anyone doing a picnic yet, but that sounds quite fun. Yeah, so I guess it's that tricky part of everyone's got lives as well, so making sure whatever they've organising is sustainable to keep organising. Yeah.
Does it tend to be more sort of personal contact and word of mouth rather than trying to sort of get people just out of nowhere to put them in
for volunteering?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can answer that just because I've only been at NM for, I guess, 7 months, so I'm not sure how they've got volunteers in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about sort of things like businesses, sports clubs, churches? You've got organisations with groups of people.
Mm.
Are they sometimes drawn in?
Definitely, yeah, yeah. So, like I said earlier, we've got a stream cleanup project, and that's something that you can do self-directed. So if you already had a group like a business who were wanting to get some volunteer hours in, then that's quite a good opportunity for them. We just had the Massey Vets come through. They did a stream cleanup last weekend, and then we've also got the youth space are going to be doing a stream cleanup this weekend, which is really cool. And we've got all the bits and pieces that they need, so rubbish bags and gloves and things like that, and a list and a to-do, you know, step-by-step tick-box type thing. So it's really easy for them to organise, and it's quite a nice way to get a group involved. And it's kind of cool. You can literally see what you're pulling out and the impact that you're creating. And really quite incredible to see what is being dumped in our streams.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's good. You want to have the organisation all set, or the, like you.
So you already have your own group.
Having
yeah.
it all structured properly, and then do they tend to approach you, or you reach out to these groups and say, do you want to come in and help?
Yeah. So it's people are reaching out to us. So we did a little bit of advertising at the start of the year for that one. And I think, you know, people who might have been involved in the past, it was used to be called the Palmy Pollution Plastic Challenge, and it was quite big in 2021. So I think there was quite a huge list of people who were already involved with that, and so just letting them know and sort of that, I guess, the environmental group's quite small in that regard, so everyone sort of knows everyone, and word of mouth spreads quite quickly, which is definitely a bonus. Yeah.
Calling it a challenge or a competition helps, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, we've changed it to stream cleanup just because then people know exactly what they're doing with the title, whereas pollution pickup challenge, you know, it's a bit tricky there, but I definitely think it's a great idea. We could get people going, how much could you collect within 2 hours? You know, see what's doable. Yeah.
So you take a carload of stuff with you, and then just...
Yeah, yeah, and then... yeah, no, and actually with that one, the council comes in afterwards and they take all the rubbish away for you, which is great. Yeah. Yeah. Cool, yeah.
So if we're wanting to find a volunteering role on a Wednesday afternoon between 1 and 3, mm-hmm. does your website have a filtration system that we can... instead of going into every different volunteering
yes,
place,
so...
Like, we've got Wednesday 1 to 3, we want to do something,
mm-hmm.
and we just want to...
If there's a current event, then I'd go into the event calendar and look on the days on our website, and you can see what's available there. If there isn't anything specifically for that time that you're looking for, Then the other way you can do it is just fill out the volunteer form, and then we'll work with Volunteer Central and see what is going to, you know, if there's anything that can fit within that specific time frame. Yeah. Yeah, I think Wednesday off to my head, I can't think of anything, but Tuesday, there is. Otherwise, you could just reach out to Volunteer Central and just see. Yeah, yeah, but there's... Yeah, I guess the other thing is if you want event versus a specific... Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, wonderful. Was there any other
questions
before we wrapped up?
No. Okay, great. If you want to volunteer, just sign on this sheet of paper. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much for that. It's I was amazed just the number of different organisations and the range of activity going on in general, but also just knowing how much there is in the environmental area. It's massive. And we hear the number of groups. We don't hear the total membership of all those groups, but there'll probably be a lot of overlap. So anyway, but it's all... I think it's great to see it happening. One thing that hasn't come through here, because these are people who are involved in the activities, but what you see from a lot of other literature is the benefits to volunteers of being involved in these sorts of things. So the idea, you've got to make it worthwhile for people. In fact, if people do volunteer, they find they get a lot of benefit anyway, without without it necessarily having to be pushed too hard. Anyway, on behalf of U3A Manawatu, we've got a little thank you and
thank
there's something saying what we do as well. So
wonderful.
If you've got some idea
what
our group is. Okay, thank you. Chris stole my thunder because I was going to thank the library for hosting and the tea and coffee and stuff. Thanks to NPR for doing the, excellent quality recording. And they even do the editing for us as well. And they broadcast 8 p.m. Friday. There's leaflets on the table there if you want to know more about NPR and how to access their recordings. They'll be on their website afterwards for all the seminars as they go. They'll be held up there for a few months, will they, Yep, so you'll be able to access them at later dates. That's really great. And to the members of U3A for helping organise all this, that's great. Thank you for coming. Next week we have a volunteer, more than a volunteer, Katrine Imrey. She's been very involved in all sorts of volunteering all over the place. Now, the issue, how do we get people to volunteer? Katrine's approach... we are Relay for Life. I was involved for several years in Relay for Life. Her approach was, we need a team of volunteers for Relay for Life. Here's your form. That's the team. And it works very effectively. So I suggest some groups might want to try that approach. Sometimes people need a bit of a push to get involved. They tend to hang back a bit and you say, look, you've got something valuable to offer, come in and you'll enjoy it. It can often work. Okay, so we'll hear about her activities and some very different sorts of groups that she's involved with as well. So that's next week. I hope we can see you here then. And apart from that, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
You're listening to Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu, and you've just been listening to a recording that we made of one of the U3A talks, hosted at the Palmerston North City Library by the University of the Third Age. If you'd like to hear this again or share it with a friend, you can find a podcast version of this talk at npr.nz/show/U3A Talks.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.